Inside the Cross Podcast.
Welcome to the Inside the Cross podcast. I'm Matt Kinnear here with Jeff Shannon and Dan Ahern. We are talking fall ball. We did the fall ball preview earlier in the season, and now with all the tournaments, all the practices in the books heading into the winter here, we're going to recap and see kind of what our impressions were and who stood out and what stood out. Dan, you kind of caught a lot of the scrimmages around the Baltimore area. You went to a few practices. What was your major takeaway from this fall?
I think my biggest takeaway is that Denver is definitely a top three team. I went out and saw them play Princeton at the brand new William G. Turney Field. And they honestly looked like they could win 10 games if they started their season right now. So very impressed by Connor Cannizzaro. I think he's, you know, with Malloy's foot injury, I think he is our Tewuertan front runner. He looked explosive. All of Denver looked great. They have a few issues I think they want to work out at midfield. They ran a lot of guys. But other than that, I think Denver, they look good. They look primed to have a big 2017.
Yeah, I watched a lot of those highlights that our esteemed videographer, manager, multimedia manager, Zach Babbo, took or produced both of their scrimmage with Princeton and then with the Canada game where they played a version of Team Canada, which was interesting. It was a little younger group that they're floating out there. But I agree with Dan. Connor Cannizzaro is my front runner for the Tewuertan right now. In all those videos, he looks like a monster, ready to go. And they have a pretty good veteran group around that. Zach Miller, I think, is strong. And there's some nice pieces that they'll have with, like, an Austin French or Ethan Walker, who is one of our top recruits. I really like that unit. And I think one thing with them is don't be surprised how much their midfield does produce. I think, like you said, they're still working out some kinks there. But
Yeah. Guys
like Colton Jackson and I expect to see Nate Morano from up top and a couple other guys really produce. It's going to be awesome offense to watch.
Ethan Walker is an interesting case. This is a team that doesn't graduate a lot of point production. You know, I think, you know, Jack Bobzien is really their only kind of point scorer that's, you know, of a lot of significance there who graduates. You know, Dan, where do you think, you know, Ethan Walker can kind of fit in and contribute right away for this Denver team?
Well, in the scrimmage I saw, he did start at left attack, and I thought that he wasn't, it looks like he was still trying to work on the transition a little bit. It looked like he was maybe a little bit frayed by the athletic defenders at Princeton trying to get used to the college game. But he did have one very nice skip pass to Connor Cannizzaro that led to a very nice goal, and that was actually one of the highlights of the game. So I think he just needs to get his foot together, get his feet ready, and kind of just, you know, work out the kinks, get that transition right. I think he will start come spring, and I think he'll probably have a good season, maybe 30 points somewhere along the road.
Yeah, they'd really like Zach Miller, I'm assuming, to play up top.
Yes.
Such a veteran presence who could be the guy that controls the offense from that side of the field, have Ethan down low on the left wing to be an offensive option. That would be, I imagine, ideal for them is to have those guys in those two positions.
Now, I was going to also say, Austin French looks to have made, he started at midfield in the scrimmage, but he made kind of like the transition to attack. And actually, him and Cannizzaro switched places between X and the right wing a lot, which actually opened up Walker quite a few times to make a play either to the midfield or to the two other attackmen. So that was an interesting little tidbit to take away from that scrimmage.
Heading into this fall, you know, the big offseason storyline was just how much coaching movement there was. In that scrimmage, Denver versus Princeton, we got to see kind of the first look at Princeton with Matt Matalon at the helm. He was the interim coach for the end of the year last year, but now it's his team. Did you see anything from Princeton that really stood out for you, Dan?
I think the big takeaway for me is that they're going to lean on Zach Currier and Austin Sims, I think, a lot this year. But another thing was that they did have two notable freshman starters play in the scrimmage with Armand Medgolci at defense and Michael Sowers at attack. And I was actually really impressed by Michael Sowers at attack. I loved his explosiveness, and he looked like he had the command of the offense, you know, ready to go. I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of had a season similar to Grant Ament at Penn State last year, where he kind of comes in and takes over that quarterback role. And then Armand looked great. He had a few notable clears where he decided that he wanted to just go to the goal and initiate offense. I think he's a good player to go. What do you think, Jeff?
It's funny you mentioned Austin Sims. I like him a lot. He was a team captain for the U.S. U19 team this summer, I believe. In terms of school-wise, he was the oldest kid on the crew.
Yeah.
He was a graduated sophomore. And that leadership experience through that process, I think, will really feed into his game and that team in general this year. That he'll be a really important piece that fans should watch out of that offense. And then I love Michael Sowers. Michael Sowers is one of my favorite recruits the last couple of years. His story is pretty impressive. I covered him 2 years ago, I believe. It was during the Under Armour All-American Games and then the U19 trials, and the kid played in everything, exhausted himself, got back up, had to go spend the hospital, a week in the hospital, but got back out there and was a key part of the U19 team as well. And I believe he was all-world selection after that victory. So a couple nice pieces there. You got to see, I need to see some more depth from Princeton, especially in the Ivy League, which I believe is going to be really competitive. So I like the core pieces. I want to see where their depth is this year.
You know, speaking of the Ivy League, the team I was most impressed with this fall was Yale, mostly because what you just said, Jeff, the depth. They have tremendous depth at every position. Defense, maybe not so much because they don't have some of the star power of last year with Michael Quinn graduated, Christopher Keating, a key defensive piece for them last year, will be taking this year off. He was injured in the NCAA tournament game against Navy, so he's going to have an injury year here. But, you know, it's really remarkable what Yale has done in terms of its consistency and building depth. It looks like it's a bunch of the same player out there on the field the whole time. They know what kind of player they want to recruit. They recruit that player, and Andy Shea and the staff develops them very well. Interesting thing about Yale that I learned from practice, they really, really, really encourage the players to bulk up in the summer session. You know, they consistently players are coming back 10, 15, 20 pounds heavier, a lot of muscle, a lot of mass, and they kind of work that off in the fall going into the spring, which is an interesting concept that makes sense. You know, they look like a football team out there. I think freshman Lucas Kotler is going to be a name that we're going to hear for 4 years. He's one of our highly rated recruits.
Number 11 on the list.
He was the MVP of the Inside the Cross Epic Committed Academy win that the Ivy League had. And he was kind of playing in that Committed Academy while he was kind of in the midst of bulking up in the summer like Andy Shea wants him to. So it's all the more impressive that, you know, he was getting used to a new workout routine and he still had it for that event. But he's a fantastic player. You know, Yale's had kind of a string of great midfielders. You know, Michael Kesey is one that comes to mind, but none have been so good and so polished as a freshman. I think he can be a first-line midfielder for Yale right away. And I really like Tyler Warner, their short-stick defensive midfielder. He's going to be one of the top, you know, kind of short-stick D-middies in the country going into this season. They had a little bit of a disappointing scrimmage against Hofstra in the Colleri Classic. Looks like they're kind of having some growing pains while they're getting those defensive pieces working together. But, you know, they've been a model of consistency in the Ivy League and one of the more impressive practices I've seen ever doing this fall All-Access series. And they have a returning Tour Time finalist, which always helps.
That was an interesting game to watch, the Hofstra-Yale matchup. Hofstra's midfield was really strong in that. That's a nice sort of precursor for them. They'd relied so much on Sam Linares the last few years to run that offense from the backside, and that they can maybe switch it up. Sometimes you see that with teams where maybe they get a little better because everyone isn't looking at the superstar to make the play. Everyone has to pick up the ball a little bit and work with it. So that was an interesting one to watch. But with Yale's midfield and roster in general, I remember 2 years ago at the U19 trials, I thought their midfield was the best of any team. And I believe if we look back at those rankings of that class, it was they were really high. That's something that they've been focused on, is adding athleticism and depth the last 2 years. And I believe you'll see that all play out this season.
Dan, any teams really surprise you this fall?
Not really. I mean, I went to see Maryland, actually, and they looked like they're probably going to go back to the Final Four, I thought. The thing for me is that they lose all those guys who went to the MLL, but I still think that they have such talent waiting in the wings. I just can't see them not making the Final Four again. I think they have so many young guys, particularly guys who are going to be seniors, guys who are going to be juniors this coming spring, who are just going to have phenomenal years. Guys like Connor Kelly, Lucas Granger, Tim Rotans, you know, those.
And that really speaks to John Tillman's recruiting approach, which is almost a football style. Some in lacrosse, you can do it a lot of different ways. Some people focus on six or seven kids that they believe will have major impacts. John goes the opposite. He blows up on 15, upwards of maybe 20 kids in a recruiting class, going down to, you know, right now we're looking at 2020s in those classes. Does a good job of hoarding depth a little bit and then letting it play out once the kids get to campus, and creates competition, creates the ability to bounce back after you lose a big senior class, as Dan alluded to. So it really is an interesting machine, and shades of a Nick Saban at Alabama or something like that in terms of the approach. You know, the success is still, the championships are still coming for them, but the approach is interesting to see in lacrosse compared to how other teams have to do it sometimes.
You know, talking about Maryland, it's instantly you bring up the rivalry, Johns Hopkins. Yeah. You know, Johns Hopkins, Jeff, you saw them a lot this fall. You went to a fall practice. You saw their event at Homewood Field, the Nick Collieri Baltimore Classic. Really injured team, but you can see a lot of kind of the pieces for this coming season.
It was a weird team to cover in the fall, I gotta admit. They were missing literally everybody that I expect them to start on their offense next spring. You're talking about Shaq Stanwyck was out. Their midfield, almost their starting midfield, Drew Sapinski, Connor Reed, that whole crew is out. They were missing literally everybody. So I know for Hopkins, it's a little bit frustrating in terms of they can't really implement their first team right now. They just can't. They're going to have to wait till January to hopefully start rotating those guys in while everybody heals. You did get to see a lot of the younger guys, or guys that are competing for spots. That's important for them. I got to see within the young guys, I like Forrest Smith, Tackman out of Haverford School. We had him rated in the top 100. Liked his game. They have a hole on that sort of right side where to fill on the attack. I like the position battle on the left side of the attack. You got Wilkins Dismuke, who I thought looked the best I've seen him in the offseason. Again, having him be productive in regular games is you know, his next step. But I thought he showed a couple wrinkles in fall ball that I had not seen out of him. Kyle Maher is still competing for that spot. Cole Williams is a big, highly ranked freshman coming in who can compete for that spot. I see him maybe earning EMO time before he takes over the lefty spot, just because his shot, his leverage, and his shot's so unique from the outside that they're going to want to take advantage of that. But they have so many injuries. You just can't tell anything about Hopkins right now until you see him scrimmage in January. It's just what it is right now.
But I have a feeling that a lot of those injuries are kind of just Dave Petromala being a little bit overcautious with the way kids get back in. Like, for instance, when I went to Maryland, like, there was a few notable players who were not dressed. They were not necessarily injured, but John Tillman was kind of giving them, like, the Ray Lewis, you know, patches. Like, yeah, they're not practicing in the fall, but they know what it takes, you know, to get back to, you know, being in shape in the spring. They know what it takes in the weight room, what it takes in the classroom, what it takes on the field. They receive a pass.
I think they'll be ready. I think it was a little bit interesting how many of those guys probably were more injured last spring than most people realize. I know Shaq being one who really was playing hurt through most of last season. And he's one that's getting a much-needed rest this fall. And they really need him to be the quarterback of that offense in the spring. So he's one that's going to get some rest. There's a couple guys who more are resting for eligibility issues. We're talking about fifth-year seniors who those last half semesters are, you know, if you want them to play in the spring and they can't really play in the fall. I know Craig Matarass is one of those guys. But it'll be interesting. I'm intrigued to see them scrimmage. I believe they have a scrimmage against Denver, one that they've kind of traditionally had the last few seasons. That's going to tell you more than I think anything I saw in fall ball in terms of what the final roster will look like.
And did you see anything from Joel Tinney? You know, finally get back out there.
It's funny, Joel. We covered one of their morning 6 a.m. morning scrimmages, which is always fun to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go out and watch the cross. Joel played in that, but they held him out for the Headstrong Classic event. Again, that one, if we're looking at overly cautious thing, that's one that was probably more overly cautious than anything. Joel looks like he's ready to go, though. Had him play a lot of wing, a lot of two-way in the scrimmages. He's going to be that X-factor that they were missing last year on offense. He's still one of my favorite players in terms of just his ability to fire up his team and get things going. And as Coach Petromala said, what's nice is that, so he was on the roster for Hopkins last year in terms of practice. He practiced every day with them, but he was ineligible to play. And Petromala said it's nice that this year he's competing for something now. He's competing for playing time. He's competing to help his team win, and that's lit a little bit of a fire under him this fall. He's one of the few healthy guys that actually can get out there and tell us a little bit. So it's good to see him back.
You know, for Johns Hopkins, you don't ease into the lacrosse season anymore. February 7th, they play against Navy. Navy's first two games are February 7th against Johns Hopkins, and then 4 days later they play Maryland, the two teams we just talked about. And Navy was kind of an interesting case. They were the focus of our fall ball issue of Inside Lacrosse. They were on the cover. Rick Soule this offseason received a contract extension after some trying seasons at the beginning of his tenure. They made the NCAA quarterfinals, where they had one of the more exciting games of the season against Brown. So they're kind of one of those teams that was really interesting to look at this fall. The question is, you know, with the quarterfinals, that's such a hill to climb. It's, can you get back there the next year? And I went to their practice. You know, we had some reports from their scrimmage on Long Island. The defense is stellar. You know, it's kind of exactly what you would expect from Navy. The defense was fantastic. Fennell didn't look as good as he did early last season. I think he kind of fell off toward the end of that season. But you have Matt Reese back there, you know, was just phenomenal. Casey Reese is a game-changing midfielder. He had that kind of breakout game in that quarterfinal game against Brown, and he really continued that. You know, he's going to be, I think, the leader of this offense. DJ Plummer is a short-stick defensive middie who is a fantastic short-stick D middie, but, you know, I think Coach Soule really wants to lean on him a little bit more on the offensive end as well. You know, when I saw their practice, I don't think he got off the field the whole time. You know, he was out there really making things happen on the offensive end as well as defensive end. But I was, I guess, a little disappointed by their offense in the practice that I saw. You know, I'm kind of waiting on Jack Ray to take that next step and really be the go-to guy. You know, he's a huge, big body. I'm just waiting for him to kind of break through and muscle over defenders. You know, during that practice, I saw the defense took a really bad approach on a double, and I was expecting Ray to kind of just power his way through that. But instead, he kind of was a little cautious and kind of took it back behind the net and threw it around. So I'm waiting for that offense to take the next step. But defensively, you know, Navy looks really good, and they have a lot of plebes who are really, really big. I think they have probably 5 or 6 guys who are over 6'4" on that team. It's really, really big physical defense, and that's going to be their trademark for a few years.
They're going to miss Patrick Kina, I think, is the key. Mm-hmm. Replacing him is, you're not going to replace him. He was just such a smart, important offensive player for them, and his ability to command and take control of that unit was so important. I followed his career all the way back to his days at Landon. He's been one of my favorite kids to watch in the last few years. And that's it's a big hole, and you see that a lot of times with offenses, with teams like this, where a guy who maybe he puts up points, maybe he's not putting up points that gets him on the national radar or the Division I you know, rankings, but he's just key to how everything flows, and replacing that is always tough, and I think that's Navy's biggest challenge right now, and we'll see how that plays out going into the regular season, especially Pitcher League play. That's where they have to compete and really flex their dominance on the defensive side.
TJ Hanshey as well, another piece that they're missing this year. A player that I didn't mention but is on the cover of our magazine is Grayson Terrain. Just a great athlete who had a really kind of strong first part of the season last year. Looked to him to kind of keep his development going. The team, though, that I really wanted to talk about because they really just went under the radar last season is Fairfield. They had a 9-8 season last year. This year, everyone's going to be talking about Towson as kind of the sure thing in the CAA to repeat as CAA champions. But don't sleep on Fairfield. You know, they really return a lot, and I think they're going to contend with Towson for the CAA crown. Towson loses basically its entire defense, you know, with the exception of their excellent short stick D middies. Fairfield returns a lot at every position, and Colin Burke is really one of the best offensive players that people don't talk about. I saw their scrimmage against Marquette. They really took it to Marquette in that scrimmage. They I do believe Marquette subbed a little more liberally, but Fairfield, I think, won by, I'd say, 15-6 was the final score. I think Colin Burke had 6 or 7 goals in that game. He scores from basically every different part of the field, whether he's dodging from behind or, you know, kind of inverting up top and kind of shooting, or up top, you know, a nice dodge and a nice feed. You know, he's really a great player. And Charlie Hornig, who was there with him, is just a perfect complement to Burke. Burke is going to put up a lot more points. Charlie Hornig does a really good job of creating space for him. He gets a lot of good hockey assists. You know, he's just a really good at moving the ball, being in the right spot. He sets a lot of nice picks, just a really good complement. If Fairfield's not on your radar, you know, put them on the radar right now.
Yeah, we're not doing our conference picks here, but I'm a big fan of what Fairfield brings to the table. The key, I covered the entire CAA tournament last spring, which was a wonderful endeavor if you like defense. The final, the championship game was 4-2 Towson. Some monster defense across the board. That's, to your point, Towson loses so much on defense. Fairfield returns everybody on that unit. So it's an interesting matchup that's going to come to a head in the spring between those two programs. If I remember correctly, Burke and Drenner at Towson were co-league MVPs last mm-hmm. year. And that's going to be a battle that plays out this spring as well. I'm really looking forward to some of those battles between Towson and Fairfield in the spring.
Yeah, and Towson, as we mentioned, replacing the bulk of their defense, but you're not going to find a better defensive midfielder than Jack Adams. That's really a good piece to build around for them.
Monster.
So they have kind of the twin towers at short stick D middie, so they're going to be a fun team to watch as well. Dan, Ohio State, it's another team that you kind of saw and that you mentioned. You noted they have their Canadian mojo back. What do you mean by that?
Well, this kind of started as a joke, really, but I said that, you know, Ohio State, you know, wasn't usually, you know, putting out their usual scoring numbers this past season. I was like, that's because they don't have any, you know, Canadian mojo anymore. But it looks like they've gotten it back. They've got Eric Fennell, who had 5 goals against UNC at the scrimmage at Calvert Hall. And they've also got the big freshman, Trey LeClaire, who had a fantastic World Games. He kind of seems to be the real X factor. And a guy like, you know, Logan Schuss and Jesse King that they can really build their offense around, you know. Not only is he a Canadian who's really crafty, but he's huge. He can draw that slide. He can either get through defenders with maybe like a crafty little cradle, or he can, you know, slip it off to a cutting attackman.
Yeah, they need Colin Schill to step up, I think, is the key to that entire offense. They have plenty of shooters, and I think with the right matchups, they can blow some teams out. When good defenses are locking down the Canadians, though, they need someone like Schill to distribute. And to hold the ball and to make some key plays. And to me, that's Ohio State season, is having him step up and be a playmaker on that side of the field to complement all these Canadian offensive weapons that they have. I think defensively they'll be cool. Offensively, that's my one point of interest for them.
And according to Terry, you know, Colin Schell looked really good. He looked really explosive. And I know there was a few games last year where, you know, he got a one-on-one matchup and he absolutely burned his defender. So if he keeps improving on that type of athleticism and that kind of control of the offense, I think with the new weapons that they have around them, I think they're going to have their mojo back.
The team that they played this fall in their big event, the Michael Bresci event, was at Calvert Hall. They played against the defending champs, North Carolina. You know, Dan, this is a team you're pretty familiar with. You did the story for the national championship game last year that North Carolina won. You know, they lose their leading scorer, but they have a lot of their returning scorers back. What did you see particularly from their offense this fall?
Cloutier, I think, is going to have a more increased role. on their offense. I think, but likewise, I think there's going to be a lot more slides coming his way after, you know, they watch the tape of the tournament. Offensively, they look, you know, like they're not going to lose too much of a step. You know, I think their biggest loss is obviously Steve Pontrello, their main initiator at X. But I think there's a few guys in the mix, and we probably won't know who that guy is firmly until the spring. But I think Timmy Kelly is probably the favorite. But I also like their midfield, and I think that they're going to actually take a step up. You know, Tagliaferri, Shane Simpson, and Klawinski, who's the new face on the first midfield. I think they provide a lot of athleticism. I think that's what Carolina's strength has been for a few years now, is that even if they don't have the best player, they will overpower you with athleticism, and I think that's going to be, you know, what they go for in the spring.
I remember watching those highlights. I thought a couple freshmen stood out as well. Will Perry is a guy that we've been following intensively the last few years through a lot, especially a lot of our events. He had, if I remember correctly, one goal off one shot that went off the post in that scrimmage. Again, I've always been a big fan of his elusiveness, his ability to juke a man and create a little bit of space and then let it rip. I think that's a nice element that someone like him could bring to a second midfield for a North Carolina, so that they're still offensive scoring threat going down that deep. And maybe, you know, rookies, it's always hard to break that first midfield because you're looking for knowledge and experience with those type of units, but he's someone that's interesting. And then the goalie position's a little interesting for them, but I really like what Jack Pozzulla showcased in the highlights for that event. I won't be surprised if he pushes for time and or if there's an issue down there, competes for time. They don't really have a leadership issue on that end with Austin Pofani. Is one of the best defensemen in the country, and I think Jack Rowlett will be one of the best LSMs in the country. They have talent down there. So if they have to go to a freshman goalie, I don't think that's much of a detriment as it would be if you're working with a young defense.
Yeah, I think the whole goalie situation is definitely their number one question, because it's hard to, you know, topple Ryan Balcom from that championship game-winning perch. But I think if Pozzulla is the guy for them, then I think they have to make that decision.
Sticking with the ACC, I think we can all agree that, you know, kind of the last 6 months, the biggest story, or the last 4 months, the biggest story in college lacrosse, the University of Virginia, the dismissal of Dom Starja, the hire of Lars Tiffany, their kind of struggles in recent seasons. They were featured in the NCAA preview issue of Inside Lacrosse last year as kind of a team that could, you know, a linchpin season for them, you know, an important season of where they're going to go next. And, you know, they didn't really have a great season this year. But Lars Tiffany bringing the Lars Tiffany style down to Charlottesville. I just got back from Charlottesville, where I went to a fall ball practice. And you can kind of see Lars's fingerprints all over that program. He's got Sean Kerwin and Kip Turner as his assistants, you know, brought them down from Brown. Really fast-paced, a little frenetic and sloppy at times, but it's definitely the Brown style of offense that they're seeing. Coach Tiffany has already kind of made a ton of changes to this team, you know, already in his short time as the head coach. For instance, what I thought was interesting is at tryouts, he had every different player wear another number, so he didn't have any preconceived notions about, you know, who was good and who was bad on his team, so he could just get a fresh start. He said just completely move forward was, I think, the expression he used when I was down at practice. That resulted in 6 players from last season were cut. 4 walk-ons joined the team. So just interesting what a fresh perspective can do. One of those walk-ons is Cam Stafford, a University of Vermont player, you know, a standout for them, who was at Virginia and made the team. You know, they also had an MCLA player who was a kind of a high scorer for Boston College last year, has joined the team. So it's a really kind of new, fresh-looking team at Virginia. Another change, Zed Williams has moved to attack. Coach Tiffany says he just wants someone as good as Zed to be on the field all the time and be as close to the goal as possible. Joe French was a player who didn't put up a lot of points last year, but at practice was clearly the best player on the field. You know, he, typical Canadian, was kind of a pest out there, but riding really hard and, you know, scoring a lot. He had a really good kind of two-man thing going with Cam Stafford. And in that practice, you know, they weren't playing together, just kind of the way that the lineups broke down. They were on opposite sides of the field, but he and Zed have apparently had a really good back and forth, a good two-man game going. So it's a lot of fresh new faces there, a new face in Dax Aiken, a big, powerful midfielder for them. So expect the unexpected with Virginia this year. You know, another interesting thing that I saw was during the practice, you know, last year Lars had the great long poles, yeah. You know, Alec Tullett, Larkin Kemp. Logan Greco had 3 goals during practice in terms of their scrimmage. Mm-hmm. So interesting anecdote that Lars is letting them play kind of the Brown style of lacrosse at Virginia. And with those athletes, it's really going to pay dividends.
Exactly. It's very interesting to hear your perspective on that Virginia practice, because I was, you know, coming to work today and I was thinking, I can't remember the last time a coach, you know, came to as big a program as UVA and had so much talent and was willing to kind of just change so much. It's very exciting. It's almost as if, like, a marquee head coach is going to a elite college football program and just changing everything up. Almost like, you know, like Chip Kelly, you know, going somewhere. But it's very interesting that you mentioned Zed Williams to attack, because that he just seems to have so many dodges that seem better for an attackman rather than a midfielder. So I think, you know, if he can kind of be that Dylan Malloy kind of playmaker, he's a big guy, he can draw slides, he could be that guy who, you know, dishes out assists as well as scoring goals.
Yeah, and I mean, we're talking about all these changes. We haven't even mentioned, you know, Ryan Lukovic, who, you know, Coach Tiffany said, you know, when he got to campus was an early leader for them and also a great playmaker on the field. And it's funny that it's such a fresh start for them, but knowing Coach Tiffany's background, you know, Dom Starja was a mentor to him. He was his coach at Brown. So it's just a really interesting dichotomy where Coach Tiffany is eager to shake things up, put his stamp on the program, mm-hmm. but, you know, he tries to honor Coach Starja with everything he does. You know, he compliments Coach Starja for kind of setting the tone, you know, the practice. My takeaway was practice was really fun. The guys seemed to really like being out there. And Coach Tiffany said, yeah, that's Dom Starja. That's not his doing. That's Dom Starja's doing. He set the precedent. He set the culture for that. And so it's going to be really interesting to see Virginia, what they do. It's certainly going to be different. And, you know, I think it's kind of a mystery because they haven't played any real public events this fall. You know, it's just been kind of, they've been keeping to themselves. They've been doing their own thing. So in February, people are going to be a little bit surprised to see the Cavaliers.
Yeah, and you also mentioned that anecdote about Logan Greco. I think the LSMs for that system is definitely my biggest question mark, because that's what keeps the whole system running. You know, that is the cog in the engine. And also, I'm really interested to see how he utilizes his, you know, his midfield athletes, both, I think, upper and lower classmen. I think they've got so much, you know, raw athleticism waiting in the wings. I can't wait to see how he utilizes them.
Just how earlier, when we were talking about Maryland, it's an easy segue to go to Johns Hopkins. Mm-hmm. Talk about Virginia, it's an easy segue to go to Syracuse. You know, the game that has given us some of the best games in the past 20 years is the Virginia-Syracuse game. Syracuse is, there's a lot of question marks, and I feel like kind of coming out of the fall, there's not a ton of buzz around the Orange. You know, Coach Desko has kind of said in quotes during our coverage and other people's coverage, you know, some work to do on both the offensive and defensive ends. Dan, what's your take on the Orange?
Well, the offense, like you said, is reportedly it's not looking so great. And I think, quote-unquote, Desko said, I was disappointed with our offensive output at the recent scrimmages that they had in Philadelphia. That's very interesting, because I feel like, you know, Syracuse is always a team that, you know, puts up 10 goals at least every game. You know, it's like I can't even remember the last time they put sub-double-digit goals up. They've got a lot of question marks, and they're also dealing with a lot of injuries. But I think they're going to lean on Salcido and Mariano a lot in the spring, and they've really got to get, you know, some of the younger guys incorporated into their offense and firing on all cylinders. It'll be interesting to see the role that Jordan Evans plays. This is a senior campaign. It's a big year for him. Interesting to see what he does.
Yeah, they have so much depth, and I won't say it's underutilized, but they have so many guys that need to step up for them to be competitive offensively. Someone like Solomon or Romano, or some of the highly touted recruits that came in the last couple of years. Some of the transfers that they need to have step up for them. There's so much competition there, and hopefully players will take advantage of that and get to the level of Mariana and Salcedo. That you're leaning on those two guys. I always like Mariana. He was a great player at UMass. He kind of figured out his role at Syracuse, and I think he's an All-American caliber player. So that's a good piece to work around. And Salcedo has proven himself, I think, the last 2 years. But they just need other people to step up. That's 100% what their issues are right now. And I won't be surprised if they really don't hit their stride until ACC play next year. Like, they'll use that first half of the season to iron out their issues and push competition. And then once they get to ACC, that's when they're going to need to really fire up on all cylinders.
Yeah, I think with Syracuse, is never a lack of talent. I think more so in this case, it's a lack of experience. They started two sophomores at attack in the scrimmage. So those guys just got to get some time under their belt. Guys like Devin Shule, Nate Solomon, only played sparingly last year, on kind of like second and third midfield shifts where they would kind of play this very unorthodox mixture of attack and midfield. They just got to get more time under their belt.
And ACC kind of hitting its stride in April is not a bad thing, as we saw from 2016. So, losses in February don't really mean much when it comes to the ACC. So, we've seen the fall.
I got one more team I want to talk
about. Oh, yeah.
So I want to bring it up. Just not sleep on it. Loyola was a Final Four team last year. Spent some time at their practice. We mentioned Connor Cannizzaro as our number one pick for the Tewaritan Player of the Year awards. I think Pat Spencer is neck and neck with him. As our colleague Christian Sweezy said, he has no holes in his game. He's a monster. He's big, he's fast, he's strong, he can feed, he can shoot, he can dodge. He's one of the best offensive players, if not, again, out there with Canzero, and even Burke, who I think could be a distant third. In terms of impact, I think play-wise, he's awesome just with those guys. But I think Spencer will be a candidate for Player of the Year honors, Attackman of the Year honors this year. Their biggest question right now is how do they replace the production of Zach Harewires, who, when you look at their stats, was a really important part of that offense last year. Notably, they brought in Mark Van Arsdale, though, who had been the offensive mastermind in Virginia for 16 years, won national championships with that program. Adding his brain to Pat Spencer's brawn and the rest of the offense, I think they'll figure out a couple of those questions that they have, and I won't be surprised that they're competing for a Final Four again this next spring.
Yeah, and you said Spencer looked physically bigger.
Yes, he looks bigger. That's, he looks stronger.
Not good news for everybody out there.
He just looks on point, and I think the work that he'll do with Van Arsdale and that offense will just pay tremendous dividends for them.
It's a perfect segue, Jeff. The next thing I wanted to talk about, we talked about all these teams, but kind of individually, who are the Tewaritan candidates for this year? We've already talked about two of them, Connor Cannizzaro and Pat Spencer. Dylan Malloy returns at Brown. He's going to be coming off of that foot injury that's, limited him this fall. And, he had to get surgery on that in the off season. He was kind of going around the Tewaritan ceremony in his little cart that he was wheeling around in. So, that might set him back a little bit. And, as we've talked about with Cannizzaro and Spencer kind of emerging as, adding even more tools to their arsenal this fall, those are two really early prime candidates. Another Tewaritan finalist from last year that I'm really kind of bullish on is Ben Reeves. He was a tall, he kind of looked tall and lanky last year, but he's filled out, he's added some weight, he's added some speed and kind of some muscle to him, so I think that's going to help him out a lot. And I just really overall that Yale team. He's going to be a key offensive piece for them. The kid's a genius as well. I think he's a molecular biology major, and he
insane.
Yeah, he might be a Rhodes scholar. He incredibly hardworking, bright young man. When I was at practice, he was in some sort of a cardiac lab earlier in the day, in his class, because he's a genius and that's what you do when you're a genius. He went to a really tough practice. Yale runs a really, really kind of rough, physical, demanding practice. And then after practice, it was a Friday night, when people were leaving, he was there on the wall you know, working on his stick when, you know,
he's probably got a ton of homework to do too.
Yeah, I'm sure he was going to go home and do homework after that. So just seeing his work ethic, he's kind of on the top of my list right now. Dan, besides those kind of group there, who else do you have?
I think a sure finalist should be at least Matt Rambo. I think he's finally over 100 goals in his career for Maryland. And I think he's just poised to have a huge senior campaign. And both he and Heacock, I think, will have great years. But I think Matt Rambo will come away with at least 50 points. I feel like he's just one player who every year he's just never taken a step back. It's just gotten better and better for him. And I think he's finally, you know, poised to live up to that number two recruit ranking that we had him a few years ago. And also, this one, it's a little bit of a long shot because I think he just doesn't put up as many numbers, but I think he's outstanding, is Shaq Stanlick. I think he's just, he is literally the engine that drives Hopkins' offense. And he's an incredible talent, and I think he's just going to have gaudy assist numbers this year. And hopefully also more goal numbers. I think his goal scoring is so underrated.
I like Shaq. I want to see how he bounces back from his injuries last year before I put him on the top five list. I mean, to me, it's Cannizzaro, it's Spencer, and then there's a lot of guys who could fill in those other three spots depending on big seasons. You got to remember how these things look like. I like Rambo. I think he's someone who could be a candidate for this spot. He plays on a team that usually has a top five defense. The committee, for whatever reason, always struggles to give those attack men the limelight when they're playing on a top five defense. You see a little bit with sometimes with like a Notre Dame or something as well.
Go ahead. Oh, I would say that my Peter Baum kind of like long shot comes out of the woods out of nowhere person is Will Sands from Bucknell. He had some fantastic numbers last year, and I think he's poised to lead, you know, the Bison to another big year offensively.
And again, I think Burke at Fairfield would be a guy that I wouldn't be shocked. Again, I think what happens with a lot of these guys is what are their moments that people will see. With that secondary group of people, where's the media attention? It's a little bit like the Heisman on a certain level.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in college football, teams will take out giant posters in Times Square for their Heisman candidates to build that campaign. It's not, you know, it's not nearly as crazy in lacrosse as it is in football, but there is a sense of we want to see the big players at the big moments before we honor them for these awards, and I think that's important to see. And so some of those guys that I would put on that tear down, it's going to be about what was their big moments these weekend, what were their point productions nationally versus, you know, the historic record or their school's record, those type of things. Before we get to that next tier of guys, that's just how it plays out. I mean, historically, as much as I've seen,
you know, another kind of group in that same group of players who don't get, you know, quite the attention, you know, that some of the bigger programs do is Adam Sherlambidis. I just think he's going to put up a ton of points, and that's going to be impossible for a committee to not recognize when a player just puts up flat out that much production.
Dude's a baller.
Defense, obviously, this is a offensive award, so
it's not. I mean, it shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be, but it
player of the year shouldn't be an offensive award, but it historically goes that way.
Yeah,
because that's where the weight. Most people think the weight goes to is that quarterback guy or that offensive. You know, the key member of offense. Historically, no defenseman's ever won the Tuaritan, and I'd have to look back at the real history of the Player of the Year award, but it's mostly been midfielders or attackmen.
I would say Chris Fennell has an inside track that it's a team that has a great defense. Like I referenced earlier, I didn't think he had a great practice when I was there, but you know, he's certainly on a short list if a defenseman were to come out and steal it this year. And Denver, you know, we talked about Cannizzaro, but what about Zach Miller? You know, there's a chance he could emerge as the go-to guy for them and be, you know, obviously a guy who quarterbacks the offense like Cannizzaro is kind of a more desirable to Wharton favorite. But Zach Miller or, you know, even Trevor Baptiste.
Yeah,
what if it goes off the rails a little bit this year and they go with a different kind of pick? And
or what if, like, Zeb Williams really thrives in Tiffany's offense and attack? I mean, that's when I'm talking about storylines, that's one that would be picked up quickly by people who follow this and say, oh, look, Zed's thriving in these offense. Look at that great story. That's a top five player right there. So, yeah, I think there's a couple guys you can hone in on real quickly, but then so much of that, like, 3-5 guy is based on the season storylines.
Yeah, interesting you hone in on Zach Miller, because in our previous discussion, I think we only mentioned attackmen. There is no midfield favorite like Miles Jones, I think, going into this year. So maybe Zach Miller is that guy.
Yeah, it's tough for that offense a little bit, where you kind of know Connor is the guy that stirs the drink, but if everyone has like 20 goals, you're going to give it to the guy who's the quarterback. I think Zach has been one of the most important players for that team in the last 4 years, but he's been more of a facilitator, and so he hasn't quite gotten the love that Connor has.
Yeah, I feel like he's kind of like their facade. They want their offense to kind of center around him, but they don't.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, it's tough. It's tough, and I believe most of this will play itself out.
Yeah.
Awesome stuff, guys. It was a fun fall. It was a very interesting fall with a lot of new coaches. You know, a lot of new storylines. I think this is kind of a good reset year in college lacrosse. So really looking forward to putting together the face-off yearbook, which is where we'll kind of formalize our preseason rankings and formalize kind of these player of the year discussions and All-Americans and things like that.
Yeah, a lot of hot takes coming out of that, so looking forward to that.
Hot take city.
I'm just so excited. Football's cool and all, but I want lacrosse back.
Well, it'll be starting pretty early. The end of January, we'll be here before you know it, and we'll be having live action lacrosse games.
February 7th. Hopping to Navy. I can't wait. It's going to be cold, though.
Thank you all for listening, and check back for more Inside Lacrosse podcasts.